You're listening to Feathers, a podcast of stories about God speaking and his people having just enough faith to believe him and obey. I hope these stories inspire you and encourage you to take flight in your own faith. I'm your host, Amy Bennett, and this is Season 3, Episode 6. Hey guys, and welcome to This Week of Feathers. I am so happy to have you here. This week, I'm honored to have Jamie Ivey on the podcast. She is the host of another podcast called The Happy Hour, but I've actually been following Jamie and her blog for the past almost 10 years and really loved her adoption story. And actually, her adoption story is part of our adoption story, and we're going to be talking about that today. But she's also a mom of four. Her husband is a worship leader at a church in Texas, and she's just all around fun kind of girl. So I'm really excited to have her here today. So let's go ahead and jump into my conversation with Jamie. Hey, Jamie, and welcome to Feathers today.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm really glad to be here.
Oh, I'm so excited to have you here. Let's start off for anybody that might not know you. I think we have a lot of people that actually listen to you have a podcast, so I'll just spoil that for everybody. But I think there's a lot of people that listen to your podcast and know you. But for anybody that doesn't, please introduce yourself and your family.
Would love to. My name's Jamie Ivey. And my husband, Aaron, and I live in Austin, Texas, and we have four kids. We have a 12-year-old, two 10-year-olds, and an 8-year-old. And we've been here about 7.5 years. He's the worship pastor at the Austin Stone Community Church. We love that place dearly. And then myself, I am a writer and a blogger and a speaker and a podcaster. I kind of dabble in all of those, with my main thing these days being my podcast, which is The Happy Hour with Jamie Ivey. And I've been doing it almost 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell us about, for anybody that doesn't know, tell us like the format and what you talk about and all that.
So The Happy Hour is just, it's weird when I try to describe it, because when I created the show, what I wanted was, I wanted a show that actually replicated what I would do with girlfriends. And so when my girlfriends and I meet up, whether it's at 9 in the morning or at 7 at night or at the playground at 3:30 after school, we talk about everything. I mean, we might 1 minute be talking about, you know, something that we're reading from God's Word, and the next minute we're talking about that we can't believe that our jeans don't fit anymore, and then the next minute we're talking about our marriage, and then the next minute we're trying to figure out what the best restaurant in Austin is. So it's just I wanted to replicate that. And so we talk about anything, everything. I bring a new guest on every week, and so it's fun. It's every Wednesday, and I really, really love it.
I love it too, and I love that it can be both serious and fun. And because I think podcasts, like, I feel like my podcast tends towards being more serious because we're talking about faith and obedience. And then I think there's other podcasts that are just for fun, but I think you have a really good blend of both.
Well, thanks. That's exactly what I wanted. And because I knew I couldn't pull off the serious every week. Like, I'm not that person. Other people do that very well. Like I'm sure you do. And some people do funny very well every week. And I needed a little bit of both. That makes me feel comfortable.
Yeah. And it's great.
Well, thank you.
So you have something sounds like super exciting coming up with that, with the live event. Tell us about that.
Yes. So I have been dreaming about doing a live happy hour. Basically what that means is I want to record a show with people in the audience. Basically because in my dream world, I'm like Kelly Ripa or Diane Sawyer, Oprah.
You could do it. I mean, you could totally do it.
I just think that they have a really cool job. And so I thought, how about I do this? And I just invite people to my home. And literally, Amy, I was like, I put it out there and thinking, okay, I hope a few people buy tickets. Sold out. I'm inviting 100 women to my house. My husband's cooking dinner for them. And I have three guests joining me. And we're going to do a live show. And we're going to eat dinner. And it's just going to be a lot of fun. I mean, I can't wait for it. It's coming up early March. And it's sold out. But I'm going to do this. I hope my goal would be to do this a handful of times a year. So this will happen again.
That's amazing. So you're doing it in your backyard?
I'm doing it in my backyard. We recently moved. So right the week of Christmas, we moved. And we have a little bit of land. And so we have a place for people to hang. And it's beautiful, kind of out in the country. So that's what we're doing.
Oh my gosh, that's going to be amazing. So you're just going to set up outside with the mics and then just hit record.
Girl, that's what we're going to do. I mean, I have, it's a little bit more professional than that. That's what I'm going to do. I do have people that are doing like the technical stuff for me.
Okay. Okay. See, I would be like trying to jack it all up with like, you know, just my earbuds.
Yeah, me too. And that's definitely why we're making this an event that you will want to come back to. So, yeah, we have people helping us and yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh gosh, I wish I could come. That's amazing. I've been to Austin, I think, one time. I came, so I was a huge FNL fan, Friday Night Lights.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and so I came, they did a golf charity event every year. And so a friend and I, funny enough, had a podcast about it. And we went as fans and, I don't know, just met all the
cast. Some of the cast people?
Yes, it was amazing.
Awesome. Every once in a while, they still do this. I mean, like within the last year, I've seen my girlfriends go to something. They have, I don't even know what it's called, but they show an episode. And I think that fans get to vote on which one. And then people from the show come and there's drinks and dinner you can buy. And it's this really fun kind of night.
Oh my goodness, that was not at all how ours was, but that sounds amazing.
I know, doesn't sound, every single time it's happened, I've had another commitment, and so I've yet to go to one, but I really want to, because I binge-watched that show. I didn't watch it when it was on. I caught that later and loved it.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. Okay, so I think it's really fun. Our interview just actually got rescheduled, but I think it's really fun that it got rescheduled after IF. So we're doing IF and turning this interview around, but I know you were really heavily involved in IF. So I would love to hear, you were doing some sort of interviews. I want to hear some like backstage stuff about what you were doing.
Well, it's not going to sound very glamorous when I tell you, because I was at IF, but I was off site the entire weekend. I did a bunch of interviews for IF that they will use throughout the year. So I literally saw two speakers the entire weekend.
I was going to ask if you got to see anything.
I saw Eugene and David Platt. I mean,
you saw some amazing ones.
I saw some amazing ones. And I literally just got home last night on Sunday. And I have until midnight tonight to watch some of the feed. And I'm going to go back and watch a couple people. So,
yeah. Well, I'll just tell you, it was all amazing. But I felt like Jen Hatmaker, Jen's talk sort of really combined everybody's.
Oh, that's
and it
awesome.
Really just and it really just got down to who Jesus loved and how Jesus loved.
That's great.
And
I that she was killed it.
She totally did. And this really wrapped up the whole weekend. I felt like Rebecca Lyons also, hers was really good. As far as feedback that we got at my IF local, hers really touched a nerve with a lot of women.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
She's great.
You can't go wrong.
Her as well. And then she's coming on the happy hour eventually, soon.
Oh, so exciting. I know. I kept looking. I'm like, I want her on my podcast.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that fun?
It's like a list. Yep. Yeah, if people have found all the people on our list.
I know. But you know what? I was over there for a little bit, and it was really, really wonderful when I was there, and tons of women. And I know that the IF locals are just even larger. I mean, I can't remember the number, but they said how many women were tuning in, and it was just crazy.
Yeah, I don't know that I heard a full number. Somewhere I heard 500,000 or, you know.
I would believe it, yeah.
Worldwide. But I saw somebody, just an IF local, that had 750
that's
people
crazy.
There.
That's crazy.
Which, that's insane number of people at any sort of event.
That is, yeah.
Yeah, we had 150 at ours.
That's great.
Yeah, so it was a great weekend. It really was. I mean, we were exhausted at the end of it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, because we actually ended up doing one session on Friday night and then held session two. So we did three sessions on Saturday.
Oh, okay.
So it just made for a really
long day.
You know? Yeah, but it was really
good. Oh, good.
Okay, so I want to tell you how I actually started following you.
Okay, I would love to hear.
I'm going to sound a little stalkerish.
No
that's
way.
Okay.
Nope.
I'm going to be the weird internet girl.
Nope.
Okay, so listen, 2007, I was a youth worker at my church and I went to, youth camp, which with the youth and Spur 58.
That's my husband's old band.
Yep. Aaron's old band was the worship leader.
What camp was
for the
it?
Weekend.
Tell me.
I think I was looking back. I mean, I was having to do some major digging through my blog because I wanted to be able to tell you. I think it was Student Life.
Okay. Yeah, we love Student Life.
Yeah, but I'm not 100% sure because I went like 3 years in a row and the best, and I didn't do I was blogging at the time, but it was so sporadic and I was not doing a great job of documenting. But anyway, so I went to youth camp, loved Spur 58. I ended up finding Aaron's blog, mm-hmm. which
is funny, the fact that he had a blog. Okay, carry on.
It's hilarious. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So his blog post at the time, he was blogging through all the really embarrassing moments he's had in his life.
That's hilarious.
So it was super entertaining. Then I think at some point, and I don't know if this was right away, but he had linked over to your blog. I don't even know when you started blogging. It was in the
early. Yeah, I've been blogging for a long time.
Yeah, so I mean, this was summer. Probably. Yeah, so this was the summer of 2007. So he must have linked over to your blog at some time. So I started reading then. So it's been like nine years.
Thank you. My one reader is you. Thank you.
I was one of your first 12. Yeah. So at the time, you guys, I think we're already in the process of adopting your two youngest from Haiti. And so I was kind of following that story, Real Hope for Haiti. Mm-hmm. I know you guys had done a lot of work with them. And so actually our family started being called to adoption. And this is going to be a link into your actual story that you're going to share. But our family started feeling called to adopt somewhere around, I think it was 2009. I sort of felt it. And my husband was not really on board. Yeah. And then the earthquake in Haiti happened at the beginning of 2010. And that's really the impetus of, and I don't want to ruin your story, but that was a huge deal for your adoptions mm-hmm. and getting your guys home. So when that happened, when my husband started, and I probably brought up the fact that I was reading your blog and, you know, your kids were coming home and all this, and him watching the coverage of that earthquake is what changed his heart about adoption. Mm-hmm. He's like, all these kids, like, you know, like they need families. And so that started him down the path. Like he went to talk to our pastor and all this. But one thing that you said when all this was happening, you wrote about it was, you said, I know, you know, your heart's going to be towards these kids, but just take a moment. Maybe God is using this to, you know, pull your heart towards adoption, but it may not be adoption in Haiti. Mm-hmm. And because originally when I saw that, we were like, oh, I've been following this and my heart has been, you know, in Haiti with, you know, your kids. And like, maybe that's where we were going. But we ended up, and that statement really just confirmed, we ended up adopting through DSS here in South Carolina.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, really that sentence in that blog post stuck with me. And like, it just gave me like courage to do like our own thing, mm-hmm. you know, like follow what God was telling us to do and not necessarily do it like somebody else. Yeah, and I know for, you know, 110% fact that, you know, we follow the right path.
That's awesome.
But, so I just want to say thank you.
Oh, I'm so glad that God used that. I mean, I hear that a lot of times, and it is an honor for me to feel as though God's used our story to lead more people towards their kids. And so that really, I'm really gracious for you telling me that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So let's back up a little bit because I want you to share your adoption stories today. So let's back up in your story and talk about how you really, you know, followed into obedience in the realm of adoption in your family.
Yeah, well, three of our kids are adopted. And so I don't know if you would like me to share all of that. Just go back to the very beginning. Would you like me to go back there?
Yeah, I would.
Okay, that sounds great. Amazing. That's where it all started. So Aaron and I were married in 2001, and we were never, like people are always like, did you always know you were going to adopt? And the answer is absolutely not. No, we didn't get married going one day we're going to adopt. We got married and thought we were going to do just like what everyone else does, work a couple of years, have two or three kids, two-story house, two cars, and call it a day. And so we moved to Nashville, Tennessee from Houston, Texas, early in our marriage and ended up getting pregnant, kind of a little surprised, you know. And so we had our first son. And at the time I was working at a co-op at our church, a homeschool co-op, and I was teaching English. And so there was another teacher there and a mom who was in the middle of adopting a little girl named Emily from China. So I kind of followed Gwen's story. And it was through that that God really started to stir our heart towards adoption. And so I always think back about that. And I'm like, man, it's amazing how God uses stories to change lives. I mean, you just told me about yours. Your life changed through our story.
Right.
And mm-hmm. our story was changed because of Gwen's story, you know. And so we really started to feel like God was asking us to maybe go down this path. But, Amy, we had zero clue what we were doing. I mean, we were probably 25, 26, just had a new baby. So we went into Bethany Christian Services, which was an adoption agency right there in Nashville. I remember we walked in, I had like a 7-month-old, and we just said, we don't really know, but we just think that this might be where God's leading us next for our next child. So we didn't qualify for a lot of international adoptions because of age and finances and a bunch of other stuff. But they did say, they told us, they said, we have a really great need for parents to adopt black or biracial boys here in the States. And so we're like, okay, there's a need, we're in. And so that's mm-hmm. really what led us to our first adoption, which is a domestic adoption. And our son Deacon was born here in Texas when we lived in Nashville. And we were there when he was born and then went home a couple weeks later with him. So that's what started the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. I love that you were just open to whatever God had for you.
Yeah.
Whatever.
So much of that was like, that sounds like we were full of faith, but a lot of that was just full of we were naive, you know? And so right. I guess God can use our naivety as well. And so then from there, we literally, again, were in the same boat. We were very happy with our family and we had two little kids. My first kids are 22 months apart. And so I was just momming it. And then I went to Haiti when Deacon was almost one, which is another story in itself about me leaving my babies, because I just thought I would never travel internationally again until they were all gone. And it was there that God really moved my heart. I'd never been to a third world country. I'd never seen what I saw. I'd never smelled what I smelled. I'd never seen anything like what I experienced when I went there. And so I think God used that to kind of put this in my heart that there's more out there in this world than where I live in Nashville, Tennessee. And it was one of the greatest things he did for us, because it really did change the trajectory of our entire family from that one trip. And so when I came home, I started telling Aaron, and I wasn't telling Aaron I wanted to adopt from Haiti. I just felt like, I think that I want to grow our family again. And for some reason that neither one of us know why, we never, ever talked about having another biological child. It's just God. We never even discussed it. And so I started to pray for us to add more kids, and Aaron did not want to. He was very much against any more kids. He was happy with our two boys. Life was good. We didn't have a lot of money, and it just seemed like out of this world to adopt. But I was patient and just continued to pray that God would change his heart, and he did. And so then that led us to Aaron's like, yeah, I'm ready to add to our family. And so we knew that we were going to pursue adoption again. And it was from there that God just kind of started opening the doors for us to go to Haiti. And we started using Bethany again. And, you know, at this point, we know where we're going to adopt. And there are waiting children that they can tell you pictures of. And I would look at them and I would see nothing. And then a couple of months into our this is what we're doing kind of plan, I was reading that blog that you mentioned, Real Hope for Haiti. And she posted a picture of three kids that needed families. And it was like something happened, and I knew that this child was our child. It was something different. I never felt this way about any kid I've ever seen that needed parents. And I saw this little boy, and I just thought, this is my son. And so I called Aaron, and he was, I think, out of town or something. And he came home, and the wheel started turning. I mean, that's really how we found our son, Amos. Mm-hmm. But from there, it was still like, I mean, Aaron was still having a really hard time. He was just like, I don't know, like, this is another mouth to feed, you know. We look back and laugh because one of the funniest things he said was we had, you know, a dining room table with four chairs, like a lot of people have, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, where will he sit? Like, we laugh.
Yes, that is so funny. Like, actually,
well, where would he sit? Like, we can't do this. We don't have another chair.
The whole thing is off because we have a chair.
We only have four chairs.
That's funny that you said that, because actually my son, before he came to live with us, we actually have to send a photo album with a bunch of pictures, and they told us to send a bunch of pictures of the house. And of course, one of them I sent was of the dining room, and our table only had four chairs. And he actually said to his foster mom, where am I going to sit?
Isn't that crazy?
It's so funny.
Yeah, so that was one of Aaron's big things, which I was like, we can buy a new chair. Like, it's cool, you know?
Yeah.
That's the least of our worries here.
Yeah, yeah.
So then from there, we just decided that we were going to just keep putting one foot in front of the other. We were trusting God. The thing about it, Amy, is that we didn't meet any of the requirements that Haiti had at the time. I mean,
because you had to be like over 30 or 35 or something. 30, right?
You had to have zero children. It switched a lot throughout our whole process. But some of the big ones were you had to be over 30. You had to have zero children or zero biological, one of those two. an income, I think might have been one. There were just, oh, and then married at least 10 years. Mm-hmm. I don't think the income, but the married age and something with how many children you already had. And so we didn't meet any of them. And so we thought, is this dumb? But I really feel something for this. Like, it's weird. Like, I can't deny what happened when I saw that. And I didn't think that I was just being emotional because I had looked at many, many children in the past 2 months. Mm-hmm. And so I really was feeling as though God really was doing something. But that's a weird feeling, too, because you're like, is he doing something or do I just think this is a cute kid? Like, because you don't want to mix those two things up, right?
Yeah, I think that's really important to talk about when you're thinking about faith and obedience and God's calling and all that. It's like so easy just to dismiss these things, saying, oh, that was just me.
Yeah, and so I think I had that feeling of, is this me or is this him? And so we kind of just decided, look, on paper, this doesn't make sense. So what we're going to do, God, is we're going to trust you and we're going to just keep putting one foot in front of the other. And as soon as our feet stop moving and doors quit opening, then we will take that from you as that this is not where you want us to be. And mm-hmm. so we just decided as a family just to keep going, you know, and see where this led. And it was hard. I mean, it was really, really hard, but we just kept moving. And the people that we contacted there, the lawyer we worked with, was confident that we could do this. And so we ended up doing it without an agency, which I never, ever recommend. And you can't even do that in Haiti anymore. So it's like off the table, but I don't recommend that at all. Just put that out there. But that's how we ended up doing it. And so then began the hard part. I mean, that was the easy part. And then began the wait for 2.5 years. So that's kind of how it started.
Okay. So how did Story come along?
So yes, my daughter Story, how'd she come along? So it started with Amos. And so we started down this journey. And at this point, here we are, our family. Now I have 3 boys. We always knew that if we adopted internationally, that we would want to adopt 2 children. Our reasonings were we didn't want that child to be the only child adopted internationally in our family, especially if they were black. We didn't want them to be, although my son Deacon is biracial, so he's black as well, but there was a difference that we could feel. And so we didn't want that to ever be the only child who had a Haitian heritage in our family. So at this point, we were like, we know we're going to adopt 2 kids. So we're going to have our family of 4 and we're going to be done. And I also, we had never in any of our adoptions gone into it with gender specific. But at this time I told Aaron, I was like, I would really like a little girl. I mean, God already knows and he'll do what he does. But if I could request this, that would be amazing. And so that began we were going to adopt a second child at the same time, a little girl. And the lady we were working with kept sending us pictures of girls with needed families. And once again, I cannot explain it other than nothing stirred in me the way that it had when I saw Amos. And I think I was just waiting for that. And we weren't going to just like jump into something too quickly, you know? And so all that to say, around November of 2007, a lady there that we know called us and said, hey, would you pray for this woman? She's having a baby in the mountains. And we were like, yeah. So we were praying for her. And about 4 or 5, and she told us she had the baby and we were excited. It was, you know, big deal. And about 4 or 5 days later, she called us and said, Story is the woman has had lots and lots of children and she hasn't been able to parent them all. And some have died and she wanted this child to be adopted. And so she asked if we would think about that. And we said yes, because it was God's such a great gift for us that he let us pray for her. Before she was even born, and let us pray for her delivery, and let us pray for her mom. And then we really felt as though, yeah, this is what you want for us. And so that's how we started adopting Story. So we've actually known about her, which is weird, in an international adoption before she was even born.
Yes. And I, you know, because I think of the timing that I came in to serve on you guys, like, I didn't even know all of this background. I mean, to be honest, I thought Amos and Story were biological.
Yes, a lot siblings. Of people do assume that they're biological. And so as soon as Story was born, Amos and her actually lived together until they came home. And so She's known him forever. And he's known her since he was, you know, 2.5. And so, but they are not biologically related. And that is why they came home at different times, because in the Haitian adoption process, at a certain point, when you're doing 2 adoptions at one time, at least when we, and everything that I say is when we did it, like six years ago, yeah. At a certain point, their papers got separated. And so that's what put Story ahead of Amos.
Okay, I didn't know that. So tell us how the earthquake, played into this adoption story.
So in the next 2.5 years from when we started in August of 2007, Aaron or myself would go down. I think I added up the other day that in the 2.5 years, I think I took 6 trips that I would go visit the kids. Sometimes we were together. Oftentimes we were separated so that we could afford to go more often. And so in October of 2009, Story came home. So she came home just the regular old, you get a visa, all your papers done. She came home at the end of October of 2009. And so although that was very bittersweet because we had our daughter home, that part of her process was over. We were ready to bond and be a family. But Amos wasn't here. And honestly, looking back, it was really, really difficult because we were so rejoicing because Story was home, but there was also so much pain because Amos's paperwork was daunting. It was we had absolutely zero idea of how much longer he would be there. And it looked like it was going to be a lot longer. So that was pretty sad. And then as we remember, January 13th, 2010, the earthquake hit, Port-au-Prince, and everything changed. And so Amos was there. It was awful. It was scary. Not only was Amos there, we have friends that live there in the city. We had friends that were there visiting their kids in the city. It was a really, really scary time. We found out later that day that he was fine and where he lived was fine. And so that was comforting. But then...
Oh, but I can't imagine. It's my kids just had a fire at their school last week. You know, it was just something in the kitchen. I can't imagine them being a world away in an earthquake like this happening.
A world away. That's what it was. And we just felt so helpless because, we love him as our son. He is our son in the eyes of Haiti already. We're his parents, but yet we could do nothing for him. It was a very difficult time. Those 10 days before he came home, we didn't sleep much. It was just crazy. And so a couple days after the earthquake, we started hearing rumors that they were going to try to get some kids out of the country. And I'm very honest to say I did not believe one of them. I talked to a woman on the phone who was so excited because she was going to get her kid home. And I hung up and I said, Aaron, this woman's crazy. This is not going to happen. We've been dealing with this place for 2.5 years. There's no way they're flying kids out of there that aren't complete. And then stuff started to keep happening and happening and happening. And next thing I know, people are bringing Amos into Port-au-Prince and we hear that there's planes going out with kids. And so the kids that got to come home were the ones that were so far in the process. I mean, this is a big, really big deal. And it was a lot stressful for the U.S. as well, because you can't just load kids on an airplane and bring them to another country. You know, I mean, that's, mm-hmm. It's illegal. There's all kinds of stuff that can happen there. But what happened is they let kids that were so far in the process come home on humanitarian parole. And then we were able to complete our adoption stateside. Okay. So that's who got to come. And so we had been Amos's legal parents in the eyes of Haiti for a while. But it was the U.S. that was holding us up. And so he got to be in the group and came home on humanitarian parole on January 23rd. So it was actually 3 months the day after his sister came home and 10 days after the earthquake that he came home. And so we look back on that time and, man, without that, we don't know when he would have come home. Honestly, I can say if ever. It was kind of crazy. So, yeah, so he's been home. Both my kids have been home 6 years. And
that's crazy.
It's crazy. And most every single day, we just feel like a very normal, typical family.
Yeah. So, I would love to talk about that. So it's been 18 months since we've adopted.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to us when he was 8. And I know Jim Hatmaker, she's also adopted. And she talked about seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Going through after adoption. I don't know if you've ever read her post about that. The first 6 months are do or die. Mm-hmm. Everybody's, the sky is falling. Mm-hmm. And then, things kind of go okay. And then you're just normal family. Mm-hmm. Did you find that to be true?
Oh, I say the first 2 to 3 months after Ames came home were some of my darkest days. And that is so difficult to say because they were also some of my most wonderful days. But I wasn't prepared for what it was going to be like to parent 4 children and one who had been through trauma. I was not, and my oldest was 6. So I had 4 kids between the ages of 6 and 2, two that had just showed up at our family. So there's that adjustment as well. And then another child that was severely traumatized, through lots of things, not to mention the earthquake that it had just devastated his country. He had lived through that. And then just got on an airplane, like a military plane, and then shown up, and there are his parents. So I wasn't prepared for any of that. I mean, I ended up getting medicated. It was a very, very difficult time for us, for everybody. I mean, I'm sure that if Amos could voice those times, they were difficult times for him as well. Poor little guy, you know, 4 and a half, and his world just got turned upside down. And so I would say that the first 2 years were very, very difficult. All of us just trying to figure this thing out, us trying to learn how to parent differently than we ever had before. And so definitely I agree with the whole seasons thing. And you know what? Our kids are still in counseling. I still go to counseling sometimes because of this. I mean, we're still working through this. And I think that that's great. Like, we're going to work through this forever. I would be naive and a very bad mom to my children if I thought that just because they showed up in America, their life is okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we're constantly doing things to help them still adjust, still address the trauma that they've been through, still address the fact that the parents that they have that love them dearly aren't the original parents that they had. You know, I mean, that's mm-hmm. hard for children. And so we still are working on that all the time. But it is nice to see that most days we look like a very normal, typical family.
Mm-hmm. I think that's so. I have found the same thing. Like, it was our first 4 to 5 months that was super challenging. I mean, again, very dark time for me. And it was just, and it wasn't anything that he was doing. It was like, and the way I've experienced is that it just triggered a bunch of my stuff that I never really dealt with, and it all bubbled up, and I had no idea how to handle it all at once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you think that what they're doing or the behavior that they are is making you have these feelings, but the truth is those were always there. It's just this is causing them to come to the surface, and then you're like, oh my, I have an anger problem. I've never been angry before. And really, the anger's always been there because we're full of sin. And then all of a sudden, a situation comes in. It's like, oh, let's bring this to the surface so that you can deal with it, you know? So I would say my 2 years of hardness was also a lot of me dealing with my messed up self as well.
Yes, and that's where I think that adoption is so beautiful. It's so, I don't know, you know, Mama Stary would say brutal. You know, it's very difficult. And I mean, I think people need to go into it with eyes wide open that it's going to be hard. Mm-hmm. Like it's so hard, but at the same time, it forces you to face these kind of demons that you have that you didn't even know you had. And you come out a better person for it.
Yeah. I mean, I hope so. That's true. But I love how you said that it's not this adoption it's very difficult and it's also very beautiful at the same time.
Yeah, so I'm just curious. So you've adopted from an infant, mm-hmm. and you've also adopted one that was a little bit older. Have you found any? I mean, it's got to be a little bit different, right?
Different. It's not even the same ballgame.
Okay.
Completely.
So I'm just curious because, you know, I have two biological older kids, mm-hmm. and then, our son came at 8 years mm-hmm. old, and I'm just wondering, would this have been different?
Oh, completely. I mean, we adopted our son Deacon. His birth mom chose us to be his parents. We were there when he was born. Because of some paperwork stuff, we couldn't go home for like 10 days. And then for the most part, smooth sailing. We thought that was difficult. And granted, it was. But it is a different ballgame when you bring home a child that's 4 and a half. Or my daughter who was, you know, 23 months. Mm-hmm. Does my son Deacon have trauma? It doesn't portray itself now, but I mean, kids that are in stressful situations, whether that's in utero or in the first couple of years of their life, can affect them the same. And so, yeah, it's completely different, and completely different for my kids from Haiti too. I mean, people think, oh, well, you bring these kids home from a third world country, then this is like the best thing that ever happened to them. Well, that's just not true, because it doesn't matter what your situation is that you were living in. It was your life and it was your home and it's all you knew. And so then we're going to pick you up out of your safety, mm-hmm. even if that looks different than our life, and bring you here to ours. And that's hard. And we need to realize that for the kids. And so I think that when I talk about it was hard for me as well, I think I would be amiss to say it wasn't hard for Amos as well too.
I think that's so important because I don't think I really got that before we adopted. And you know, I think you see some things in media where, like, you know, the kids are saying, oh, I just want adopted. I can't wait for a family. And, oh, I'm so grateful to this family. No, like, they're just mad that somebody took them from their family. I mean, in our case, like, I mean, I have found that they're not grateful. They're, like, mad because, you know, their life just got turned upside down.
Yeah, I always say adoption is built on pain. I mean, it's built on suffering because if it wasn't, there'd be no need for it, you know? And so adoption's beautiful and wonderful, and God built my family around it. I would die for every single one of my kids. I love them so much. But I also am very fully aware that their story started out with pain.
Yeah. I do want to say, I think it's beautiful too. And, it's just every time it has taught me so much about how God loves us so unconditionally. Yeah, I just think it's a beautiful picture of the gospel.
Yeah, and, for sure.
Yeah, and it really is. I always like to say, and I'm sure you feel this the same way because, you know, it's similar to what you wrote in your blog, but for people that might be feeling, you know, a pull to adopt, I think it's important to say that our command from God is to take care of orphans, and a command is not to adopt. It is a beautiful picture of what God does for us to bring us into his family, but it could be that, you know, there's a lot of ways to support orphans. I mean, it could be respite care. It could be, we have these things called guardian ad litems. I don't know if you guys have the same thing, but just supporting families that have adopted, just a ton of ways.
Oh, for sure. I always say that adoption is not for everyone. If anyone says that, you should just slap them in the face. No, I'm kidding. Don't do that. But I agree. There are so many ways. I mean, even if you just support foster families, you're doing something.
Oh, yeah.
A CASA worker sponsoring children. You know what else? Let's think about this. Let's think about how ways that you can also, like, help families stay together. You know, that is supporting the entire thing as well, is just help making ways to help families actually stay together, whether that be around the world or here in the States.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Then we're preventing orphans, and that's what we want to do.
Oh, that's such a good point. So in our case, we went through DSS, and I hear a lot of things from people who want to adopt that feel like money is an issue. For at least for social services, I can tell you ours was totally free, and you know, they paid for the lawyer, they paid for everything. I think we had to buy, like, a fire extinguisher. That was it through the whole process. But I know for those people that are called to adopt internationally, you know, money is an issue. So what do you say to people that feel like, I want to adopt, but money is the problem? That's the roadblock. What do you say to those people?
I say I get it. When we adopted all of our kids, I mean, I always joke we had no money, which isn't the truth either, but we did not make a lot of money. We didn't have an extra $30,000 laying around. I don't know who does. Well, I'm sure people do, you know, but whatever. Not me,
not
or
me.
My friends.
nope.
But what I would say to them is that if this is something that you really feel that God is asking you to do, to step out on faith, that he's going to build your family through adoption, then I would say a couple things. I would say, number one, my first thing is not fundraising. My first thing is how can you adjust your life now to make more room for that money? And so it may take some sacrifices. You know, it may take cutting down cable. It may take selling a car and buying a cheaper car. It may take downsizing a house for that. Whatever. Look at your life and be like, how can we adjust our living right now to make room for that, to make space for that financially? The second is there are grants out there that are helpful to help families in this exact situation, to where they're either going to give you a grant or a loan. Most of them are zero interest loan. And so they're going to be like, hey, we want to come beside you. We're going to give you this money. And then you can pay us back over time, zero interest. Or there are grants that you can apply for. We applied for grants and got a couple when we were going through the process as well. And the last thing I want to say is, like, we did fundraising, and I have seen other people do that as well. And I know that that can feel like an awkward thing, and I get that. And I think that it can be awkward if it's not handled in the right situation. But I also think that there are people that want to walk alongside you and help. And so we are very faithful to pray and ask God to do that. And alongside our fundraising, we had several people just step up, some anonymously and some just seeing the need and step up and help us provide financial means for that as well. So those are my three things that I would say to people.
Yeah, and I love that because just last week on the podcast, we had a financial advisor, and she talked about the concepts in God's kingdom of kings and priests, where priests are the people, you know, doing God's work, and then kings are the people that are building wealth to support the priests. Mm. And just kind of the idea of, I mean, just the thought that some of us, our purpose, and it's not in every situation, but some of us in our purpose is to provide the monetary part of the deal. Mm. And I think that you actually could be, you know, holding somebody back from doing their part in God's kingdom.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's an opportunity for somebody who maybe feels a heart for orphans, but doesn't want to adopt, that could be their part.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, if someone's listening and they're like, I have the means, I am, you know, I'm older, I don't want to have any more children, or our family is full, or for whatever reason, or this is just not what God's asked me to do. All of those are very valid reasons. You maybe have the means to be able to help someone. I mean, Aaron was somewhere during our adoptions and mentioned it to a couple people, and before he left that event, I mean, he was traveling and leading worship. Before he left that event, someone handed him a check for a large amount. And it was just that God had used him to allow them also to be faithful in what he'd asked them to do.
Yes. And I mean, I think that hits on the point, is that really this whole thing is God's idea.
Yeah.
You know, and he will provide. And I just want to encourage people that I don't, you know, he owns a cattle on a, or what is it, a cattle on a thousand hills or something like that.
He owns all the
cattle.
Let's just say that.
Yeah, let's just say that. There's something about cattle.
All of them are his, is what I say.
All of them are his. And resources should, I mean, it's so scary to think about that. $30,000 is a lot of money. But I just think that God can do it.
It's so scary. But I also want to say this, too. Like, I think that I really like to advocate for kids that are older, that need families. And I know that you would probably do this as well, saying how old your son was. But there are a lot of kids right here in the United States that need families. And so I'm preaching to the choir when I talk to you. But I think a lot of times people will go into adoption and they want to adopt a cute little baby. And I just want to throw this out there, that there are so many older children that used to be a cute little baby that need parents. And so let us not neglect those kids in while we're searching for a cute little baby to add to our family.
Yeah. Absolutely. And we're living proof. You can do it.
I'll get off my soapbox.
No, that's a great soapbox to be on. Because I think that's what, you know, people say, oh, there's so many kids that need adopted right here in the U.S. Well, a lot of them are older. Mm-hmm. And that's what people don't tell you. But
and I will say that is a million times harder than bringing a baby. I have brought a baby into my home. I brought a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. And I will tell you that it is a million times harder. So I don't want someone to think like, oh, this is awesome. This is the easiest thing ever. No, but it's still needed.
It is needed. And I think it's just another beautiful picture of Christ's love for us, is that it does take sacrifice. And I feel like I just tooted my own horn a little bit. I didn't mean for it to sound like that. But I mean, like, if we truly are, and going back to if gathering, you know, if we are truly going to love who Jesus loved and how Jesus loved, he loved with great sacrifice. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. I am totally there with you. It can be done, and it can be beautiful, and it can make you better, and it makes your family better. Our family is so much better to have our son with us.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. I really enjoyed hearing the backstory I've never heard.
Well, good.
Yeah. So, Jamie, if people want to check out your podcast, read your blog, how can they do that?
Well, you can find basically everything about me on my webpage, jamieivy.com. And if you want to listen to the show, I would love for you to. I'd love to have you at the happy hour. You can go to iTunes and look up Happy Hour with Jamie Ivy. And there I am.
Yeah, do it because it's awesome.
Yes, we love it.
All right. Well, thanks so much for being here, Jamie.
Jamie, thank you so much.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that conversation with Jamie. I know I just enjoyed thoroughly finally being able to talk to her and share how she had really impacted me during the time when we were trying to decide whether to adopt or not. You know, I really don't know if our son would be with us without her story and that connection to Haiti that we had during that time. So I'm so thankful for that. And I love that it actually gives me that picture of a domino, how it only takes one domino to knock down a whole bunch of other ones that's in a line. And this concept of a domino was brought up at the IF gathering this past weekend. So we had at our IF logo, we actually had shirts that says it only takes one. And so the idea was you just need to impact one person, and then that person is going to go impact somebody else. And it's just a domino effect. And this is a very specific, clear example of that, about how she was affected by somebody else's adoption and then how we were affected by hers. And then that continues with people that are affected by our story. And so I think that's just a beautiful example and a great reminder for all of us, when we obey Christ in whatever he would have us do, that when we share our story, when we live out our story, when we live in obedience, that we can affect the people that come behind us. And I think that's just so powerful and a great reminder to move forward, because you can affect other people and you can strengthen their faith while you walk in your own faith. The other thing that I really loved about her story is that she continually said, you know, we just did the next step until there wasn't any more open doors, and prayerfully just walking through that and seeing where they would have them, but just not trying to figure out everything, not being knowledgeable about everything, but just taking the next step. You can be naive and ignorant and all of these things, but when God really calls you, you just take the next step that you know to do. So that was such a great reminder to me. And finally, the last thing that I take from her story is just how the things that God calls us to do are not necessarily easy. And we've talked about that before, but I think it's such a good reminder that just because God calls you to it doesn't mean that it's going to be, you know, like puppies and rainbows all the time, right? Because Christ's example is that he sacrificed for us. And so there's going to be many things, not just adoption, many, many things that he's going to call us to that are very difficult. And I think that's on purpose, because it requires us to lean on God and teaches us dependence on him. And we learn where we are weak and we learn how strong he is. So this was just another great example of that. So I just wanted to remind you guys that you can go over to featherspodcast.com and you can see the show notes. She actually sent me another book called it's about myths of adoption. So I think that's a great one to check out if you are especially going to be adopting internationally. I think that book was specifically written for that. The other thing I wanted to remind you about is the shop. We still have t-shirts for sale. I've got more journals coming in. We actually have, I think, a run of the t-shirts coming in this week, and would love to do another one. So go ahead and get one of those. Help support the podcast. Really, really appreciate that. So thank you guys so much. I don't think I say enough, but thank you guys so much for listening, and we will see you next week on Feathers.